Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 26th through July 6th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only, some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Welcome to the Lovejoy Hour, sponsored by Cook 100 Degree, boiling hot water straight from your kitchen tap. You know how it works. You want a cup of tea, maybe you fancy a herbal tea or a fruit tea. Not that I like fruit tea. I've never liked fruit tea. Maybe I'll try fruit tea again. I've not tried it for a while. But anyway, you want a hot drink. Maybe you got a cold and you want a lemon sip. Maybe you want a honey, ginger and lemon. All you have to do is you have to walk to the cooker tap and voila, there it is. Like magic. Siegfried and Roy would be impressed. Cooker don't need lions to pull out this great theatre. They just need a tap. If you can afford one, I recommend them. Go to cooker.co.uk for more details and to look at the designs. Now, today I'm curious about why the hell England are supporting FIFA and are at this World Cup. Okay, I decided to be quite vocal, controversial with the title of this podcast because I think it's important. We're watching the World Cup and all the tabloids are hunting down stories to let us know how bad the Qatari regime is. But why are we even there? Surely the real bad guys on this are FIFA, corrupt FIFA. We know FIFA is a rotten organisation. We know that. We've seen the investigations. We watched what happened. So then really, is our problem the English public? Our problem with FIFA, or should it be with the FA? The FA represents our interests. We know Qatar isn't suitable. We know FIFA isn't an honest organisation. So why aren't the FA representing our interests and making a stand? Why aren't we getting together with the German, French, Swedish, Dutch, African nations, South American, Asian authorities, all the football authorities in the world and pulling out a FIFA? I mean, the sad truth of this is, if it wasn't for America, we would still have Sepp Blatter in charge, probably. Yes, it took America to come in and try and sort out our game. I think it's quite pathetic. Where were our politicians? Where were our FA? And I'll tell you where they were. They were telling Panorama, the programme which did the expose on how corrupt FIFA were, they were telling them to be patriotic, shut the fuck up, because we're about to turn up and we're gonna go to FIFA, corrupt FIFA, and we're gonna limp pathetically into a fixed bidding process with David Beckham and Prince William and David Cameron, and we're going to beg and see if we can get there. Of course we weren't gonna get it. It's truly shameful. The facts are there. And we're still going along with it, like frightened little sheep. By the way, if you think FIFA have cleaned up their act, well, maybe they have, but the FIFA president at the moment, Gianni Infantino, who you might have seen do that horrific speech at the start of the World Cup in Doha, Qatar, that is where he lives, in Doha, Qatar. That is where he lives. I'm not putting two and two together. Well, I am. Nothing has changed. We need to leave FIFA and start again. It's been corrupt for, I don't know how long, years and years. Now, if you think I'm going mad, there's an amazing documentary on Amazon Prime called Kickback. It's about how corrupt FIFA are. And it's also about a journalist called Andrew Jennings, who spent years exposing FIFA and how corrupt the organization is. Andrew died this year, but his work has been made into a documentary. We can now be joined by the filmmakers on the line from LA, no less. Ooh. Please welcome Maura Anderson and Clay Twill. Maura and Clay, welcome to my podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today. What's the weather like in LA?
Beautiful.
Nice. Yeah.
Can't complain.
It's hot. It's always hot in LA, isn't it? It never rains in LA. So listen, I've just done a bit of an intro where I've sort of talked a bit about FIFA. Your film's been enlightening to me as well. It was fantastic. Obviously, Andrew Jennings was the main contributor to it, really, with his work and his. Tell us about your involvement in the film and how you got to put this together. Maybe start with you, Maura.
Yeah. Well, it sort of came about. Trish Shetty, one of the producers, had done an investigation back in the 2010 World Cup. And she had met Andrew a few years later at Play the Game, which we mentioned in the film. And so she had brought the idea to Campfire, a company here, Ross Dinnerstein. And Clay and I have both worked with him. Clay directed a series, Innocent Man, several years ago that I produced. And so when this came about, we thought it would be a fun opportunity to co-direct. And so, yeah, that's how we became involved.
Clay, what was the idea behind the film then? What did you set out to achieve?
Well, we really wanted to highlight what Andrew's contribution to this whole breakdown of FIFA and uncovering what they've done over the last 50 years. And so he had written a couple books about it, and we were able to read those, digest them, and also talk to Andrew a little bit just before he died in January in order to sort of get a sense of who he was. And, you know, when he passed away, I think Moore and I really took it to heart that we wanted to bring not only his ideas, but his spirit to the movie and really have it be sort of the a little bit more lighthearted, jovial takedown. Because he did have a lot of fun in taking the piss out of people in power, and that's what he did. He was a fly in the ointment of FIFA for a long time, and we really just wanted to bring Andrew's spirit to the movie and the best we can in a 90-minute film show what happened.
Andrew is a hero, isn't he? Really, I mean, he's a genuine hero for the way he kept going, and he knew something was wrong, and he kept going and going and going. And would it be fair for me to say Andrew started a breed of journalism that has helped because it's outed a lot of bad doings, the wrong guys in sport across the board, including sort of like cycling and everything. Olympics.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and he started with the Olympics, with the IOC, and sort of made his way over to FIFA, but he absolutely did. And because he kind of came into it with a different background. You know, he was doing criminal takedowns in the UK, drugs and mob and all that kind of thing. So he kind of came into it with that attitude. And he sort of described, you know, a lot of the sports reporters are afraid of losing their access or, you know, not getting the interview because they pissed somebody off or said the wrong thing. He didn't care. So he kind of just came to it with a really different attitude.
What was he like then? So you met him before he died. What was he like? Did he feel happy that at last the FBI had come in and actually taken a bit of FIFA down? Not totally, as we know, we're still going with it with FIFA, but was he happy about what he had actually achieved?
I mean, I think so. I think, yeah, he was. There's some video clips in the film even of him just crowing, you know, like he was gloating, and he loved the fact that anybody that he could have, you know, even a minuscule amount of justice for what they've done and the bribes they've taken and the, you know, cultures and lands that they have exploited over the years. He was all for it. So, yeah, he was definitely, I think, happy to see what has happened from the 2015 arrests on. You know, I don't think he would have loved the fact that Sepp Blatter and a bunch of people have been let off in the last 4 months, but I think he would have been happy to see that they're still trying to be brought to justice.
Yeah, I mean, if for anyone who hasn't seen the film, it's really worth watching. Andrew spends a lot of his life just accusing the bigwigs of FIFA about how they were bribing people to get to get cups to countries, and then it's so blatantly obvious when Russia get it, and then Qatar with a population of 3 million and only one city suddenly get a World Cup, and it's so bizarre that people are still accepting FIFA. Do you not think that being the makes this film, isn't it weird that we haven't all walked away from FIFA yet?
Yes, but I think there's not any other option. And that sort of, I mean, Andrew and some of the people that were around him certainly discussed that and what an alternative might be. But FIFA is so integrated on such a huge scale in so many countries that I don't know how that does happen. And I think also people's just love for the World Cup and love for football and all of that ends up sort of superseding. So you sort of saw this cycle of every 4 years where everybody get really angry about it. And then the World Cup would come up and all of that would sort of dissipate. And then they'd ramp back up again. And so it was sort of, it was difficult, I think, to build momentum to ever really take them down and get rid of them.
Can I just ask you, are you fans of football yourselves? Claire, you a fan of football?
Absolutely. Yeah. I grew up playing football here my whole life. I played, all through high school, made all state team, followed, actually was a huge fan of European football in my high school years. Didn't even really support the U.S. as much. I like would wear my Germany jersey to school or my Man U shirt. So I definitely followed the game and really have loved it my whole life. For me, it's nice to be able to dig beneath the surface and sort of really think about the ideas and ways in which the game has grown and changed since I've been alive.
Maura, are you a fan of football?
I am. I only played up through high school, so I didn't continue. But I of the women's team here, which sort of supersedes the men's team a lot of the time.
Well, ours does now as well. I don't know if you know, but our Lionesses are better than our men. So good on them. I worked in football for a long time. I don't know if you know my history, but I had a football show over here for 11 years, and it was a popular one on a Saturday morning and ran. And I feel angry. I feel a bit of very uncomfortable watch your film, but I also feel very angry. And I was working bizarrely I was working at FATV at the time that we decided to send Cameron, David Beckham and Prince William off to sort of beg for the chance to host the World Cup, which Qatar got. And what always, I remember always talking to my boss there saying, this is mental. Why are we sending people over like that? Surely you just do an adult document like most businesses would do. You'd have to go and wine and dine them. And then what I remember so clearly in your documentary brought back to me was the Panorama documentary that Andrew Jennings had put together. They were calling the tabloids and David Cameron, our prime minister, and the FA were calling it unpatriotic to actually say that the people they were about to go and bid with were corrupt. And I thought, whoa, we've got it wrong here. Is that what you feel as well, that we were all blindsided by FIFA and we got it wrong, all our organizations, our authorities?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I just like there's a book that I worked on this documentary based off a book, Freakonomics. And it really, one thing it taught me was to always have an eye on incentive structures, like who is going to be incentivized in whatever situation. And so, we're looking at the heads of the UK talking about Andrew and other press people being unpatriotic. That's because at some level, they are trying so hard to get the soft power and the sort of cultural commodity of the World Cup brought to the UK that they'll do and say anything. I mean, it's not just money, but it's sort of like the cachet of it all. And that's what the World Cup and the people who run FIFA wield that across the entire world. They know that it's such cultural capital and it in some ways legitimizes whatever country is hosting any of these events.
Yeah, I think at this point, I don't know which one of you wants to answer this. We ought to, because you touch on it in the documentary, we ought to say why Qatar, a country of 3 million people, I know where they're very rich, they're under 3 million actually, and not very much, no infrastructure to host a World Cup, why they actually wanted to host it. Which one of you wants to answer that? Because I think that's an interesting point in the documentary.
I can. Yeah, it was, I mean, the main reason is what Clay just said. It's a soft power play for them. And it's to, it would, it, the World Cup puts people on the global map in a way that there really isn't. I can't actually think of any other events aside from maybe the Olympics, which I think they're after now, that actually put people in the eyes of the world in such a positive light. And for Qatar, you know, they are relatively unknown, especially to the Western world. And so I think for them to be seen in that way, it just kind of escalates them to another echelon.
It's for protection, isn't it? The more famous they're known around the world, the more well known they are as a country, as you say, none of us really knew they existed until they got the World Cup, then the harder it is for other countries, nations to attack them. That's kind of the theory behind it, why they keep going for all these sporting events, isn't it? Because they are so tiny.
Absolutely. And I mean, they certainly used, buying Paris Saint-Germain was a political move exactly to that end. So I think that certainly they're going to continue to look for that.
I'd also say, like, something that upsets me is this, dare I say, it's very Trumpian. It's very the way that you take a criticism and turn it on its head and try to use it against people. So the fact that a lot of defenders of Qatar are saying, we should have the World Cup in a Muslim nation. Like, yeah, no one's going to disagree with that, of course. But, you know, crying racism just because there are major issues within the country, I think it's like trying to simplify an issue and not understanding the full context of what the argument is. And I think that it's just a shame that we can't have these like sort of more complex, nuanced conversations, because while, yes, there should be a cup, I think, in the Middle East somewhere, not being able to wear sort of one love armbands and not having, you know, the fans have the freedom to go what they want or express themselves in the way that I think is sort of like freedom of speech wise should be universal, I think is a real problem. And for me personally, that's just something that jumps out that I've seen trickle out in the last week leading up to the cup and these things. You just like hear these stories over and over again. You're like, wow, why is this happening in this country again?
Yeah, so I mentioned this in my introduction to you, and I don't actually blame the Qataris. We know what the country is now because our journalists have done enough investigation. We know they're into the LGBTQ community. We understand that, and we understand there's problems there. But why have they got it in the first place? That we understand why they want it, but the real enemy, I feel, is FIFA, because they're the ones who gave it to them. And then our real problem for me is the Football Association in this country and all the other organizations, Germany and France and Sweden and African countries and Asian countries, who haven't gone, no, we're not doing that. No, this is ridiculous. In the middle of summer with under 3 million population, no, you're wrong. And so our real problem is we're not getting, the FA aren't representing us properly in this, and nor all any of the other football authorities, and that's what I really got from your film as well, is the fact that the football fan is not being represented here. We're just being given it and saying, there's your World Cup, get on with it. And is that how you feel it is as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, the fact is, if you look at it, I mean, you kind of have to go back to the core that the World Cup was given because, you know, 13 men were bribed. And so that's one of the shocking things about Qatar to me, was that when all that came out, that there was not any adjustments made. It wasn't, there was no, not even like, are we going to move the World Cup somewhere else? But there was just not really any acknowledgement that this was given wrongfully.
And I suppose
one thing that Moore and I, oh,
go on, carry on.
I was going to say, one thing that Moore and I talked about, and we tried to put as much of this in the film as possible, was showing the way in which what was a purely for sporting body back in the, you know, even like the 30s of how FIFA was run, slowly evolved and changed, and especially under Havelange and then under Sepp Blatter, how it was this shift into giving more power and privilege to the corporations that would fund it, whether it was through TV rights or marketing deals. And, you know, in a way, FIFA is reflective of a lot of the ways in which the systems in our culture and all over the globe work. And so it's just reflecting to us that the money and especially the corporate interests have really taken over the game. And so we don't, you know, like next, they could say, hey, guess what? We're having the 2042 Cup on Mars, and we couldn't do anything about it. You know what I mean? Like,
this is my point I keep getting back to. We can, because we can go, no, we're not going. And if England, like England are the most, with Germany and Brazil, I'd say we're the three most famous nations in football. And if one of us went, we're not doing it, and then I'm sure Germany would. I mean, I honestly, God bless them, but I thought when the German players were putting their hands over their face, I was watching it going, just leave the competition. It's not Qatari who are saying, don't, we're going to give you yellow cards. It's FIFA. And they're not a country. The Qataris aren't saying, we're going to lock you in prison. It's FIFA. FIFA saying, we're going to give you a yellow card because we're protecting the people that we gave us money. And if we think, I mean, I don't know, because I don't know him, but the president now, Gianni Infantino, who did that amazing speech, which was horrific at the beginning of the tournament, he lives in Doha in Qatar. So if you think they've straightened up their act, I imagine just from that, I can see Maura shaking her head there. Do we believe FIFA are now a clean organization? What do we think?
I mean, in our opinion, no. I think that they fixed some of the things, at least outwardly, that were presenting a problem as far as the bidding structure and the way that they sort of did all of that. You know, they eliminated the consolidation of power when it comes to the bid, who the bid host is. So now it's decided amongst a much bigger group, which, by the way, doesn't mean that you still can't bribe them. It's just a lot more people to bribe. So I think, you know, your ratio goes down. But I think that they fixed some things that were outwardly wrong. But I think ultimately the way that FIFA interacts with the globe and with autocrats, and I don't think it's changed all that much. And we sort of highlighted at the end, but there was a thing that, to me, I was really surprised wasn't in the news more, with Gianni Infantino essentially trying to make a deal with SoftBank to package the FIFA rights and just sell them off wholly for billions of dollars. And I was like, that seems like something that should be, I would think that would get you kicked out of being president of FIFA, of sort of back channeling to try to sell the rights out from under it. But he's still there. So.
And like when we first started the film, some of our initial ideas were we were very inspired by Asif Kapadia and I'm blanking on the other.
Adam Curtis.
UK filmmaker, Adam Curtis. So we really wanted to do something that was like getting into these bigger sort of political ideas of how FIFA functioned. And we were going to do a lot of interviews that were just audio only interviews. And Maura and I talked to a bunch of regulators who were brought in post 2015 to clean up FIFA and to work with new regime and try to understand how it worked and fix all the problems. And they all got kicked out. Eventually, you know, it's like it was very transparently a PR move where people were brought in, they were allowed to work for a year, and then they got sidelined and were either not listened to or were literally said, thank you, please leave. And so nothing, you know, nothing really was able to change, which is why, to Andrew Jennings' point in our movie, it operates like a mafia. And so if one boss, you know, goes away and somebody just comes in and takes their place and the machine keeps working.
I wonder if football is, you're talking about Adam Curtis there and his political documentaries, which I love them. I wonder if football is a great metaphor for where the world's at the moment. And you know, it's a lot of greed which goes on and a lot of turning a blind eye. I'm a Chelsea fan and I can't stand being a Chelsea fan at the moment. I think my club is so soulless. And I remember turning to my friend one day and go, I'm not sure what I'm supporting anymore, because we've got a Russian guy here who's just spending obscene amounts of money. You know, every time a manager doesn't win, we sack them and put a new one in. I'm not sure whether the players want to play here or they're just the richest players in the world. And I'm going, what bit am I? So I own a bit of the pitch, which is good because we've got a pitch owner's system going on. But I don't know what I'm actually supporting here, because we're not, you know, when you support a club, you're supposed to go through the good times and the bad times. And if you're supporting Chelsea, all you're doing is you're just, I want only the good times, because we, unless we're competing, we won out. But again, with Roman Abramovich, it was like the Chelsea fans, a lot of them, and apologies here if you're a Chelsea fan, don't hate me too much, but they go, he's the greatest owner of all time. And I go, hold on, this is, you've forgotten your values and morals here a bit, because this is the guy who's got billions of pounds, and rather than build schools and hospitals in his country, he's spending it on yachts and footballers. I mean, it's like, why is that the best owner of all time? I mean, do you know what? It's in the middle of a pandemic, we spent 300 million to try and rebuild a team to win the league. It's like, shit, everyone's dying around us. Why can't you put some of your money in a vaccine or something? At least Dolly Parton did that with her millions. But, you know, and so I think, you know, sorry, it's a very long-winded question here, and it's more of me doing a monologue than a question, because I get so angry, because I love football so much. It's supposed to be about the bloody community, and it's supposed to be the one event that brings the world together. And we're all sitting looking behind our cushions and behind our sofas at Qatar because we're all really uncomfortable with the whole thing and why we're actually there in the first place. Do you think football is a metaphor for how bloody horrible the world's got at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think so. I also think it really speaks to just how ego-driven so much of it is. I mean, I think greed is sort of hand in hand with ego now. I mean, we could say the same for, you know, you look at our last cycle of US elections and the amount of money that was sunk into candidates that were never going to win or probably even get nominated in the primaries in some cases, just because they could, they had the money, they didn't, but you look at it and you're like, why are you not spending, you could solve homelessness in our country with just what you spent on that. And it's crazy. But I think it's ego personally.
There's a reason that, David Goldblatt has in the opening of our movie has a bit of a monologue too of just like what football means to people around the world, and to your point and to your passion about what why it means Chelsea means a lot to you and just sort of the community around it. And I do think I connect to that too as somebody who played the game and you know, it taught me life lessons as I played it and built all sorts of, you know, parts of my personality. I think that it is important, and to David Goldblatt's point, like, that's why it matters. We should all care about who runs it, and it should have integrity. And so that's what we're sort of trying to be a little bit of a cautionary tale for here in the movie, to say, we're trying to show you as much as we can, because it does matter, and we should try to do something about it. So I hope we don't sound like throw your hands up like we can't do anything, but we do. Maura and I did talk about this, about wanting the film to represent, a bit of a red flag for people to be able to say, we should absolutely be paying attention to this. And we want to, you know, it should matter to everybody why this story is not okay.
I think also to your point earlier that you're right, that these teams have to come together. I mean, you saw with the qualifiers until Poland and Sweden came out saying, you know, we're not going to play Russia. I kind of was, we were sitting here like, is FIFA going to do anything? And, you know, they finally did, but I think that there was pressure. And I do think, you know, if the EU was to say, we're just not going to play in the World Cup anymore, that there probably would be some changes.
I think your film, by the way, really does highlight it. You've really achieved that, and it's a sickening film for a football fan to watch. But I think it's a very important film too because of that. And I couldn't stop thinking that if we can't sort out football, how the hell are we going to sort out everything else? Because football's supposed to be one of the pleasures in life, and football's supposed to be fair. You know, I know it's not, but it's supposed to be. And it's supposed to be the one thing where, like, I don't know, over 100 countries enter the World Cup in the qualifiers, and it all gets down and it ends up with the guys all turning up in Russia or Qatar. And then they're all playing out to see who the best team are. And it's supposed to be this wonderful celebration. And it's just horribly corrupt. And so, if we can't sort out football, what the hell can we do?
This is true. This is the existential question here of how can we have something that's supposed to be so joyous and represent sort of like the best of human excellence of sort of physical performance, but also how we organize ourselves. And so, I feel like if we can find a way to put pressure on FIFA and do it in a way of having these larger nations really wield their power, or if we can make it affect the bottom line of enough of these sponsors that they would do something, there's the Budweiser, Coca-Cola, some of the Visa. These are some of the traditionally biggest sponsors. I think also like Hyundai what if we all just said, we're not going to buy any more of those cars. We're not going to buy any more Coke products. Like what would that do? And see if we can put the screws to them that way too.
The problem with football is you watch all the kids now watching the World Cup and the joy I got watching it years ago. Actually, you talk about the World Cup in Argentina, and it was even corrupt back then. And I do remember that World Cup. I know I don't look old enough, but I am. And even there was corruption there, but the joy I got out of it. And then I suppose with the commercial properties, the Nikes and the Adidases and the Cokes and Pepsis and everything else, they see people like me enjoying it. They want to put their money at that thing, don't they? So it's kind of a tough nut to break. Do you think the real solution to this is we need to sort of say, I think Andrew Jennings said this in the documentary, correct me if I'm wrong, we need to get rid of FIFA and start again. Do you think that's where we're at?
Probably, yeah. I mean, I think it's tricky. I mean, FIFA, the FIFA that we know, obviously FIFA was originated well before this, but the FIFA that we know was created by Horst Dassler from Adidas and Havelange. So it's this sort of perfect marriage of corporate sponsorship and sport and sports washing. And, Havelange had been around since the 1936 Olympics. Like he knew kind of how this worked, and certainly in Argentina. And I think that I think you kind of need to start over with all of the information that we have now, to create a structure that actually, I mean, it's tricky though, because it's like you say that, but every corporation has the ability to become corrupt. So I'm sure you could start over, it would break again.
I feel like Andrew said it too, and he's like, FIFA only has as much power as you give them. They are this body, but like, why tell me again what you do here? And it's like, no, we make the rules and we run like the bidding. And you're like, but yeah, but why? Like to what extent at this point are they really needed? There's just, is there a way to create a whole new body and system that is like truly not for profit, and that is just a regulatory body that helps all the other FAs around the world sort of mesh and interact with each other. But I think it's possible. I'm an optimist in that way.
Everyone's
the tricky thing though too is all these countries are getting money from FIFA, so until the handouts stop, a lot of them are not so inclined to try to get rid of them.
Yeah, I think that's got to be the thing. They've got to be a non-profit organization, haven't they? And that has to be the solution to this problem. It did make me think though when I was watching your documentary that obviously we had the ESL going on over here, the European Super League, which I think Fan Power in the end managed to push that whole thing, but then you've got UEFA going, whoa, they're a bad organization. You're thinking, hold on a second, are you any good? Because Platini got done, and so you start looking around and you're going, who do I trust out of any of these organizations? We know the FA has no power in our country anymore because the Premier League has so much money and so much power that they're doing what the hell they want. The Premier League are not passing their money down to grassroots football, that's for sure. We got clubs looking like they're going under all the time. And, meanwhile, Chelsea, and I remember talking to someone. I shouldn't really say this, but I remember talking to someone at the head of I won't say which one, but one of the broadcasters a while ago, and I said to them, why don't we distribute the money equally amongst all the football teams, you know, so that the ones who do worse, this is the TV money I was talking about, the ones who, and also the competition money, the teams who do worse still have as much money coming from that, apart from their owners, they have the much money, and they're like, they wouldn't bother playing if they weren't going to win money. I'm like, hold on a second, why to the fans here, and the idea that you were playing for the fans. And it seemed to me, watching your documentary as well, that FIFA have forgotten that it's a football event, and they just see it as this massive way of generating huge sums of money. That's what it came across as. Is that what you felt making it?
I did. I mean, I think that certainly, I don't know. I think FIFA was created to make money. I think that was, I don't think it, from their perspective, it was ever from the fans. That was for the fans. It was sort of a marketing ploy. I think that certainly the fans and all of the people playing football and stuff believe that, but I don't think that FIFA ever did.
Yeah.
We also talked about it more. Remember our conversations about the sort of like skybox view of the game?
Oh, yeah.
You know, so like the game, as we were studying it and watch, you know, researching, that it started as this blue collar sort of like event of the people, for the people. And then as more and more money got shoved into the game, and it sort of went from like being on the pitch, and like the crowd was literally on the pitch watching, and then stands were built so people could be in the stands. And then there was like, you know, press boxes, sky boxes got built. And then it seems like the game is almost being watched. It's being, you know, like from a blimp above. It's like it almost is like the players and the game itself doesn't matter. It's just a giant like spectacle. Yeah. And so you get further and further away from the game of truly like what is,
well, what,
know,
I
what
noticed
is being put out there.
Yeah, what I noticed about the game was it got less about it over here, and I think in the World Cup as well, it got less about the fans, more about the players, and then more about the owners, and it's sort of got on that journey. And I remember there was a time where I spoke to one of the sporting brands. I won't tell you which one. It's not fair. But they said the team's dead. We only care about the individuals. So if you watch marketing of the boots during the World Cup, they market individuals. They don't market teams because they don't care. They care about Ronaldo or Messi or whoever the player is of in our case, Kane, you know, over here. And that's what they care about. And then when you listen to the commentators, they sort of say things like, he has the right to go down, a player. And you're like, no, he has the right to entertain the football fans and be honest and a loyal player. But they're now playing for the club and the money. And you know, there was a real change when I started doing it in 96. And there was a real change where suddenly football constantly only talked about money, how much transfers were, they're looking for a cut run because they need the money rather than because they're going to entertain their fans for one more game, you know, and it all became money. And I remember doing an article on this once. To become a football fan, you have to become an accountant these days because everyone's so obsessed with the money of it. It used to be, is your right back any good? Now it's like, how much is this? What's the transfer here? What's the budget of the club? Where's your money coming in from? And then what happened after that was we suddenly had the trophy owners come in, which is what we're now having the trophy that like the Qatar and the Russians and everything else. And now that's what we've got with the World Cup, with the Russia and the Qataris now buying the bloody competition. It kind of leaves a very horrible taste in my mouth. I suppose the bit we have to get to, go on, sorry.
I was just going to say, I mean, one of the really interesting things for me was we got to sit down and talk to Gary Lineker for a couple hours for the film. And just being able to talk to him and hear how in that time span that you're talking about, the way that it's changed, and asking him about what it was like as a player, you know, back in the early 90s, and what kinds of media questions he was getting, and sort of just what it was like to be at the highest echelons of the game at that time, and now what it's like for the players now. And he's like, I couldn't have made it now, you know, like it's just a completely different mindset and a different thing. But yeah, I loved as a fan of his and a fan of the game, being able to talk to him and be like, man, this guy said the game has done a 180 from what yeah, it was like when
he's been modest there. He had a knack of putting the ball in the back of the net, and you're always going to make it if you're one of those guys, and he could do that. Well, there was a brilliant bit in your documentary where he said he was called in at the last minute to go with Beckham and Prince William and everybody else to the bidding process, to the bit where they find out who won, the couple of days before they decide who's going to host the World Cup. And he said he suddenly realized he was in a room and there was no point in them being in the room. And it's like the realization that the bid had already, it already been decided. And it was like, they must have felt so stupid. And then they must have felt guilty, especially David Cameron saying, oh, Panorama being unpatriotic, which you that was beautiful that you put that interview in there, because politicians should be looking always for the right values and morals, and they weren't doing it there. And, that was interesting. I suppose the bit we have to get into in this documentary, though, is America's position on it. Now, this is really unfortunate for us, because I don't know if you're aware of this, but as English fans, we don't like America liking football or soccer, as you call it. And every time you beat us, which you have done a couple of times, it is the most humiliating thing ever, because we believe that you don't like football at all. And, you know, you obviously play your NFL and everything. By the way, we're doing this podcast. We're about to play you this evening. So
in an hour and a half, we will be on the pitch.
So it's an interesting time. But if it wasn't for America, Sepp Blatter might still be in charge of FIFA. It took the FBI looking into some of the discrepancies to actually bring a case against FIFA, didn't it?
Yeah, and they were only able to come in just because of the financial crimes element, because people had used the dollar in bribing each other. And because of that, they were sort of able to have jurisdiction. But I think I still kind of credit it back to Andrew, because I think he fed them a lot of the information that they needed to be able to do that. Because without him and without, you know, some information that was given to him by a whistleblower, I don't think they would have necessarily had everything they needed to take to kind of go up to Chuck Blazer on the street and say, you know, come work for us or you're going to jail.
You better explain who Chuck Blazer is.
Chuck Blazer was worked for CONCACAF, and him and Jack Warner were sort of the worst perpetrators, I would say, in the CONCACAF sphere. And Chuck Blazer, you know, he was on the executive committee for years, and so he had sort of been across a bunch of different bids, a bunch of different deals, and he also didn't pay his taxes for God knows how long. And so that's ultimately what they were able to take him down on. They said, we know that you haven't paid your taxes, and you know, you can come work for us. And so he basically went undercover for several years with FIFA, he ended up having a keychain, and he would just bring it to conferences and to FIFA events, and he would put it on the table and record everybody talking about their sort of insider dealings.
Yeah. I mean, these guys were like cartoon character villains. Jack Warner, mm-hmm. and Chuck Blazer and a lot of the people that were running these bribes, it's like the Hamburglar running a scam. It's like, yeah, you're wearing the jumpsuit already, man. You're doing these things so openly and so brazenly. And so I think that's part of the genius of Andrew, was that very early on in the early 2000s, he was able to plant a flag and say, you know, very publicly, I'm going after you guys and I'm going to take you down. And so what he really was doing, he wasn't talking to them. He was talking to the people that work for them, and he was saying, if you've got dirt on your boss, are you pissed at your boss? And you want to, like, I'm the guy that's going to get the documents. So like, I'll take whatever you can give me. And he just did that for a decade and eventually got some things that trickled out to become what was the cornerstone of what, you know, flipped Chuck Blazer. And then Chuck Blazer was the thing that was able to take a lot of the FIFA executives down. So it's like little breadcrumbing it little by little by little. Is what led to the actual arrests.
There's that beautiful moment, isn't there, where he's sitting chatting to the, you know, like a sort of court thing. I'm not sure what you call that. And he's sitting there having a chat, and he's explaining it all, and he just seems so happy last. At last he's got it. Do you know what?
He finally got vindication. He had been, 15 years of people telling him he was a crazy person and that none of this was true. And sort of gaslighting him and other journalists. There were, you know, there was a few journalists that were really key to this, along with Andrew. And, you know, everyone was just like, no, you're nuts. That's not happening. And so for them, that was a great moment to finally be like, look. Yep.
Lasana Liburd, Jens Weinreich,
Thomas Kistner.
There's a whole slew of them all over the globe that interacted with each other and were part of, getting the documents.
Do you know what this would make? It makes such a good movie, wouldn't it? You'd have Andrew Jennings probably played by Michael Sheen because he does all that sort of stuff over here. Then you'd have Jonah Hill playing. What's the American guy again? The one who ended up having to tap everything. What's
Chuck Blazer.
Chuck Blazer, and Jonah Hill would play him, and slowly, you know, they'd have to wear a fat suit in the end because that guy got so big, didn't he? And then maybe Ryan Gosling could be a cute FBI guy or something like that. And then, you know, he's talking to Chuck and Andrew and Dean. I mean, this has got me. You've got to get the rights to this film. You know, you've got the film there. You've got to get.
I'm pretty sure it's already happening. I think people are working on it as we speak.
Oh really? Yeah. Oh, I hope I've got some of the actors right on that. That would be absolutely great. Yeah. We're just sort of coming to the end now, but just finally, on that One Love armband thing, what do you think watching that? I mean, I really felt that by everybody, we empowered FIFA again by Germany. I can't remember which countries were going to do it, but I know we were and Germany were. And then we were called into a room apparently and said, you're going to get a yellow card. And over here, I think you'd have got a massive support if Harry Kane had got the yellow card. I think we'd have loved it. And I think if we'd got the yellow card and then said, if you don't rescind the yellow card, we're pulling out of the tournament. I think over here, we would have, this is why I think the FA have got it wrong and all the other organisers. I think we would love it if we said, right, we're taking our guys home because you've given us a yellow card. It's not anti anything. It's positive towards something. We understand that they don't like it in Qatar, but that doesn't matter because it's FIFA. And for FIFA to curtail to it, it stinks to me. Do you not think that... am I saying the right things here? Do you not think that we should be standing up to FIFA like this?
Totally. Absolutely. It makes me furious that they would allow, they being the national teams, would just kowtow to this and not have something that is a basic human right, a label to be walked all over and to be silenced. Like, I don't agree with that. I don't find it right. All of the public figures and sports heroes and people that I think stand for something would not allow that. So, I you're talking to somebody who like grew up idolizing Muhammad Ali. Like, he would not for a second entertain the idea of he had all of his titles taken away. You want to give him a yellow card? Like, go for it. Fuck off.
Yeah.
That's what I actually was disappointed that they didn't just say, well, okay, give us a yellow card then. I mean, why not?
Yeah. Well, because it's not. I mean, I'm very clumsy with my language here, but we all understand Qataris, the Qataris' view on LGBT movement. We understand that, but surely everybody who says we should be playing in these countries because we need to all be coming together, it's an ideal opportunity for us to say the rest of the world believes it. So get with the program sort of thing, you know, but understand their point of view. But by saying you can't do it because we're in their country, surely FIFA should be going, well, we're pulling out then. We'll stop the tournament. America, can you hold it next year? I mean, America or Britain, we've got enough stadiums and Germany. We could do it like a drop of a hat. But it's always because it's about making money, isn't it? It's like, you know, all of us could stay it, but where's the cash at? You know, how many billions are we going to make out of this stuff? You know, and what's also interesting, and you know, for anyone who wants to watch the movie, I really recommend it. The documentary, I really recommend it because you see all the World Cups. The one in South Africa, which I went to again, I felt uncomfortable there. I was like, is this a good World Cup to be at? I was at the one in Germany, and I thought this is a good one. And then when I'm in South Africa, I'm thinking, hold on a second, is this money well spent? And you. On the documentary, you're saying no, it's not being well spent at all, is it?
Yeah, no, it's. I mean, it isn't, and it's tricky. I mean, I just sort of have the feeling human rights are human rights, and we should all be to a point. We're all globally interconnected enough, regardless of a country's specific beliefs. I sort of feel like with something like with the World Cup, it's sort of, I don't know. I guess majority should rule in that regard. I mean, yeah. Most of the countries playing there don't share the same beliefs. And I think there's a difference in respecting a country's beliefs in disregard for human rights. Mm. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of other examples, especially with the conflicts going around the world right now. But I definitely think both FIFA and the team should have stood up a bit better for that.
Listen, thank you so much for both of you for joining me. I think it's an important film for football fans and possibly further reaching than that, because if we can fix football, we might have a chance of fixing some other stuff in the world, because it's the one thing where we all come together as one. So it is a great film. I recommend everybody to watch it. It's really good, and Andrew Jennings hopefully will get the praise that he deserves from everybody who watches that. What are you two working on next? Do you know yet, Clay? What are you working on? Anything exciting?
Well, I've been working on my own sort of investigative doc for almost 6 years about a lawyer taking on Big Pharma here in the US. So I hope to be finishing that up in the next couple months.
Brilliant. Amora?
I am in the process of figuring it out. I actually just had a baby 3 months ago, so I'm off through the end of the year and then jumping back in.
Congratulations on that. And listen, I hope your team do horribly tonight. And I hope we absolutely smash you, because even though I'm anti this World Cup, I'm still pro us beating America in football. So
I just hope that wasn't there an occurrence where there was an English goalkeeper that let one through his hands a few years ago when he played the US? I just hope that doesn't happen again.
Oh dear. All right, listen, thank you so much for joining me today, and yeah, as I say, everybody go and watch this documentary. It's called Kickback. Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.